What do you know? What do you think? What do you think you know about Freddie and the Maple Leafs as we sit here right now on the morning of Friday, September the 4th, 2020?
Scott, the most concrete information I can give you is that I know that since the rumors really got going, I think Cal Dubas has reached out to Frederik Andersen and spoken to him twice just to kind of fill him in on what's happening. From what I understand, he has told them, we are not shopping you, but we are getting asked about you, and there are teams that have interest in you. Where those conversations have gone from there, I can't tell you, but I know that's the general tone of the message. Like I've said and written, and I wrote in that column, I don't think the Leafs are going to make a move just for the sake of making a move. I don't think they will do anything laterally. I think if they do anything, they will see it as an upgrade. And I think the most likely scenario, but not guaranteed to be the scenario, is that they will wait to see how, with all of these available goalies, how things shake down and decide how to pursue from there. But I believe he, never mind. I know he's spoken to him a couple of times and just said, look, we're not trying to do anything, but we are getting asked about you.
Why do you think he's calling Freddie and telling him that, Elliot? Because I'm sure GMs get calls on a lot of players on this team.
I think, Mike, because it's kind of gotten out that he could be traded. I think Carolina is a team that has interest. I think they want to upgrade from Mrazek Reimer. Andersen would clearly be an upgrade, and he'd be the kind of guy that Carolina would go after because, one, I think he's a good goalie, and two, he's very cost-effective. You know, he's got a salary that has mostly been paid. 80% of his salary for next season was in the form of a signing bonus that's now been paid to him, so his actual cash output for next season is $1 million. That makes him very, very attractive. So that's what, and I think that narrative has kind of gotten more out of control than the Maple Leafs would like. And I do legitimately think that, you know, this has gotten some degree of wildfire this week, and it's gone farther than I think the Leafs like. And I think they just wanted to be up front with the player and say, this is really what's going on.
If they do deal him, what do you think he gets in a trade? Like, what do you think the Leafs could get back for
one of those defensemen?
Well, you know, here's what I think. I think that the one thing we've kind of learned now, Mike, is that there's a couple of different things going on here. Number one is that, you know, with the Kapanen trade, that was about creating room, right? That mm-hmm. wasn't as much of a hockey trade, although they got a first rounder and a prospect they liked, as much it was as about clearing room and giving them flexibility to do things. I think if Andersen gets traded, it's about that kind of thing too. It's because they have something else in mind they like in goal, and it is a means to get them to that. That's what I think it is. I don't think, from what I'm sitting here with right now, Mike, I think if he gets traded, it's about getting them to another situation in goal that they like better. So I don't know that's the tough thing for me to answer about that, because I think that trade is about okay, we've got something else we want to do, and now we're going to create the room to do it.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the fascinating follow-up to that, Elliot, of course, is perhaps what we don't know, which is how they evaluate Freddie relative to some of his peers. Because off the top of my head, based off of who would presumptively be available, I struggle to come up with clear and present upgrades.
Well, put it this way. You know what? I think that's actually a good point, Scott, because I think they look at it as he's a good goalie and he's very cost effective. Like, I know there's been a lot of talk about Matt Murray, and I think from a base point of view, as in, do you like Matt Murray? I think the answer to that question is yes. But do you like Matt Murray at the price point that he's going to come in at? I think right now the answer is no. I don't think that they can afford his number. So I think that what we're talking about here is an upgrade in talent at a salary cap number that makes sense, and or a cash number that makes sense. And, you know, like we said, Anderson's cap hit next year is five, but his actual cash is $1 million. And if you've paid that bonus, which they have, there's something to be said for, hey, you know, like, why not keep him and have the benefit of a lower actual cash salary? Like I said, I think that it's got to be a situation that makes sense at a number that makes sense, because the issue with Matt Murray was not necessarily his play. It's what the number is going to be.
And, you know, from your informed opinion, Elliot, the fact that Freddie's only got 1 year left on his deal, if he's got 3 years left, maybe 2 years left on his contract, we're probably not having this conversation, right?
I would agree with that. Yes.
Okay. So it is about more than simply performance. The Habs, and we'll get to that in just a second with the Jake Allen acquisition, maybe blew this theory out of the water, but I was doing some thinking. You know, for me, I'll always come back to baseball, and the use of the opener is newfangled in the sport, and one of the accusations that gets thrown around, particularly of the team that is behind it, you know, really invented it, the Tampa Bay Rays, is the attempt to suppress the salary of starting pitchers in arbitration, and I guess potentially in free agency as people's careers go on. There's no question that sports science and the medical people will tell you that 50 to 55 starts for a starting goaltender is better for his durability over the long haul than a 70 start regular season heading into the playoffs. But do you think the sort of 1A, 1B goaltending approach that a lot of teams are taking now also serves to mitigate some goaltending salary? Like, if you're my 1A and you're going to play 48 to 52 games, and you're my 1B and you're going to play the rest, I can get my 1A for 3.5, 4, and I can get my 1B for 1.5, 2, and I keep the collective cap number of my goaltending down as opposed to paying one guy $7, 8, 9 million a year.
I think there's something to that theory, Scott. I think it's a good theory. However, where I think it potentially gets destroyed is the postseason. And that is that, you know, there's probably a much bigger split between your 1 and your 1B in the playoffs. Now, this year's playoffs has been ridiculous. And, you know, like, you know, Brian Spear, who produces our shows, last night he came up with something really interesting in the post game that, you know, there have been 38 different goalies who started a playoff game this year. And this year's playoffs are unique in the sense that, you know, 24 teams were in them and that there was a round robin where 8 of those teams played 2 goalies. You know, for 24 teams and 38 goalies, to give you a comparison, last year there were 16 teams that made the playoffs and 15 of them started the same goalie every game. The only one that didn't was Carolina. They had a split. So, you know, I think the difference between your hockey and baseball theory is that, you know, in baseball, you can't throw out the same starter every game. So that's the difference. In hockey, you can. But I do think that the Maple Leafs do believe that Jack Campbell is an upgrade over what they've had the last couple of seasons. That will they think that will benefit Anderson next year. And I do think they think it will make him a better goaltender. So your theory is solid with the exception of what happens in the playoffs.
So do you think that we're going to see more teams do what Montreal did and go after two starting goaltenders, so you could either start either guy all year if you wanted?
I think that what's happened is, first of all, this year is a really volatile year in the goalie market, Mike. There's an incredible number of goaltenders and good ones who are available. From the free agents, Leonard, Markstrom, Holtby, even like the 1B guys like Khudobin, Greiss, Talbot, like guys who are really good and can play and can be your starter or a very competent backup. There's a lot of good free agents out there. We also know that there's a lot of other good goaltenders available in trade. Murray, one of the Arizona guys, Kemper, Ranta, and, you know, potentially Anderson. I think there's more of an opportunity this year to create flexibility for you. I think the thing, and also next year, we don't know what next year is going to look like. We know that this year, the return to play, it's been really hard on goalies. Injuries, effectiveness. I think there are teams looking at this. And, you know, the commissioner again told teams this week on a board of governor call that, you know, December 1st next year is a guideline. It's not the reality. So there's a chance that, you know, we might not be playing until January. It's possibly February, although I know they don't want to go that late. You know, the goalies are going to be, you know, what if they get injured or banged up at the rate they've been doing it now in the playoffs? You better have two guys. I think the other thing, too, with Montreal is, I looked it up the last 3 years, Mike, on games where Price hasn't played, they've got a 3.25 goals against average and a save percentage of 902, which is not acceptable. And they just said, we're giving away too many points for 1 year. We're going to do it this way because Allen's got 1 year left under contract. And I just think they said, it's kind of like Toronto. They have to fix their backup spot.
Elliot Friedman, our guest on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So we understand the Blues' perspective on moving on from Jake Allen. That's a pretty significant cap hit that comes off the books. Does that lock them in on getting Pietrangelo done?
I think the Pietrangelo thing is, it's like the proverbial duck, right? I think there's it looks calm on the surface, but there's furious paddling underneath. I have been led to believe, Scott, that that's a much more difficult negotiation than I think a lot of us have realized. I I've actually used this line a couple times this week. The thing I worry about is that I say that and I hang up the phone and they sign them and I look like a total moron. But the conference call with Armstrong after the Jake Allen trade was actually, he had a great line about, we have to get this done, but, you know, there's math. And they ask him what the math was, and he goes, what did he say, 81 divided by 23? I think it's been a very, very difficult negotiation. I think that Pietrangelo has been disappointed that they've done three extensions, two on the blue line before they got to him. The two are, I don't think he's got any problem with the players like Falk and Scandella. You know, just that, you know, they traded for them and got extensions done pretty quickly, while there's been very little movement in his particular case for quite some time. And, I think it's become emotional. We've all been like, Mike, you've done contract negotiations. Scotty, you've done contract negotiations, not as public as Pietrangelo. But when the emotion gets into them, they get very difficult. I think the emotion is entered in this one. They still got a month to sort this out before free agency begins. But, you know, I've been told that it's emotional and it's complicated. And that certainly gives them more flexibility. But I just think it's been a lot harder than everybody expected. And I would say this, a lot harder than Pietrangelo in particular expected.
Elliot Friedman is our guest on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. There is actual hockey going on, which we do need to get to. But one more issue related to a team that's no longer in action. Darren Ferris is now the agent for Max Domi, who is an RFA in Montreal. What do you interpret from Max's decision to change agents?
I think last year was a tough year for Domi for a lot of reasons. He struggled offensively. I think he and the coach butted heads. I think the playoff was really hard on him through no fault of his own, right? You know, he stayed out a bit longer because of his health situation. And I just think he was constantly playing catch up. And, you know, the Canadians, you know, had a situation where he showed up at camp. They kind of liked what they were looking at. And he was constantly fighting to get back up there. He was on the second power play, wasn't on the first power play. And I just think he wanted to make changes. I'll tell you this. I think it's similar to Anderson in the sense that I think they're going to get asked about him. I think people are just like you and me in the league. They read what's going on. And they see, what does this mean? I think they'll be asked about him. You know, the thing about Domi too is, you know, he's arbitration eligible. You know, his arbitration's all numbers, right? His cap number out of ARB is probably going to be around five-something million. The Canadians can handle that this year because they've got a lot of cap room. But now he's getting closer to free agency, and you know that if you want to sign him long-term, it's going to be a bigger number. And I just think that it might not make sense long-term for Montreal to do that if his role isn't going to increase. And I don't think they're guaranteed to trade him, but I think they're definitely going to look and see what the market is for him.
With Vegas' goaltending situation taking a little bit of a twist this week or this last week and a half with Fleury going to net and getting the win, it puts them in a tough spot right now because you have Leonard not being able to close the series out. What are the chances that Fleury plays in Game 7?
I think it's going to be Leonard. I'm not making 100. I'm not putting my this month's mortgage payment down on it because at least as we talk at 8-something a.m. this morning, Mike, because I can't tell you for sure, but I think the idea was to play Leonard, right? I just think that, you know, Pierre DeBoer sent a message that he believes Leonard is his number one guy. And I think in Game 7, winner take all, he's going to go with the guy he thinks gives him the best chance to win. And I think he's made it very clear that that's Leonard in his mind. The other thing, too, and Ron made a good point about this last night, is he was on the other bench in the Vegas meltdown last year, right? And, you know, Fleury was the guy in the other net. And I wonder if that's one of the decisions that he's kind of made. But I would expect... I would be surprised if it's not Leonard tonight. And as I said on the air last night, I believe that was the plan.
With Elliot Friedman. Nathan MacKinnon. And I don't want to get into a MacKinnon-McDavid debate because I always feel like when we start to talk about who's the best player, everything gets heated. It diminishes the one that you're not choosing. And in no way is Connor McDavid diminished if you say MacKinnon is the best, and in no way is MacKinnon diminished if you say McDavid is the best. I think the thing about Nathan MacKinnon that's most fascinating, Elliot, is that he took this step a few years into his career. Everybody knew, he was a first overall pick. Everybody knew he was a great player, but he hit another gear a few years in. It wasn't as clear and as obvious for him at 18, 19 years old in the NHL as it is for guys like McDavid. This guy is an incredible hockey player.
Well, first of all, Scott, you have to realize that now everything is an insult. So you may not be trying to insult people, but you just did.
Okay.
Because that's just the way the world is now.
All right.
Yep. Okay.
I'll go tweet it.
Somebody's going to be insulted, and you better be ready for it. You have completely disrespected Nathan MacKinnon on this show. You know, I think there's a couple things. Number one, you know, because he plays in Colorado and the Avalanche went through some rough seasons, I think sometimes you can get lost, right? Like, you know, if that could have happened to McDavid too, if he wasn't playing in a place like Edmonton where everything is under the microscope. So I do think that's a factor. You know, you have to get into the playoffs or you have to be sort of like on the radar. And I think, you know, McKinnon kind of got lost a bit when Colorado was having tough years and it wasn't necessarily in one of the NHL's most intense markets. But, you know, I'll tell you this. I think he's an incredibly driven guy. I think he's got all of the attributes that that you make a superstar. He's talented. He's got work ethic. He's driven to be great. He wants to win. I think all of those things. And I think the other thing that really helps is his friendship with Crosby. I think he's learned that at the foot of a master. I think he sees how Crosby prepares, and he says, I have to be like that too. During the pause, you know, I did a Q&A with him through email, and I said to him, I can't remember exactly what I said, but you're going to be in the Hart Trophy conversation this year. Do you think you're now the best NHLer from Nova Scotia? And he kind of laughed in his return. He said, I'll be the best player from here when I have three cup rings and two Olympic gold medals. And to me, like, that was a perfect answer. I think that, and you know, look, like, you look at them the last two nights, we saw at times how much Hutchinson struggled this year. They have owned those last two games against Dallas, like, absolutely owned them. And he's at the forefront of that. And I think he deserves a lot of credit for it.
Last one for you, Elliot. If Markstrom's healthy enough to play, does he go back in?
I don't believe he is. I don't think he'll dress tonight. And so that leads me to B. I mean, you know, actually, I'll tell you this. I was up late last night after the game because, Mike, I am committed to my craft. And I was, because we have a pregame show tonight, and I was looking through Markstrom's back-to-back numbers. And he's never done it in the NHL, but he has done it a few times in the AHL. Although the last time was not, last time was all a couple of years ago in the playoffs against the Marlies. He hasn't done it a lot. And the last, he did it early, not so much later in his career. His numbers are pretty good. Now, that said, as Kelly pointed out, he looked exhausted at the end of last night. Not that anyone can blame him. He's carried them for two games. But I don't think Markstrom's healthy enough to play, so I think you'll see Demko tonight.
And just lastly, Elliot, acknowledging that we're a little over time. You understand how GMs think. You talk to all of them. Does Demko's performance affect the Canucks' approach with UFA Markstrom?
Yes, I think it does. And secondly, Scott, like, don't worry about the clock. Give the listeners what they want.
Yeah, okay? More Friedman.
Yes,
sorry, absolutely. Doug Smith.
Yeah. We're getting an email for sure. Yeah.
What's he gonna talk about? Nothing exciting happened in basketball last night. Please, like, anyone wants to hear about the Raptors? What did they do? The thing that stands the lords over the Vancouver goalie decision is the expansion draft, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why this decision gets forced, is in a year you have to make one of these two guys available. So there's no question that it will have an impact on their future.